Okay, as happens in these things, I didn't exactly get done what I submitted in my abstract. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the approach that we take in USDA, NRCS, and particularly in soil survey when it comes to dynamic soil properties and using that to interpret and assess soil degradation. So, I put this up here because really, I have co-authors, but this is all my fault. So if you have any questions, let me know. I'm going to go through a little bit about the past. And this is really the recent past, because in the far past, soil survey didn't deal with dynamic soil properties. We thought of everything as land use independent. That's the thing we were concerned about mapping. So we've moved past that a little bit. In the recent past, we had something called the Soil Change Guide I'll talk about. I'll tell you a little bit about what we're doing right now and a little bit about some of our future work that we hope to do soon. But as you know, government things change sometimes. So the Soil Change Guide was authored by Arlene Tugel and some others in 2008. So these were procedures for gathering dynamic soil property data and linking that to soil survey. So the idea is you know where a soil is mapped. You find soil map unit components within map units across a given area, and then locate plots within that in different land use systems or different land use management systems. And the idea was that it was a real rigorous comparison between these land use types. And the idea was to say, this is how human management has changed this soil. And the thought was, as we did that, we could apply the results across soils that were similar, and we would replicate this out across the country. So it was focused on this robust statistical comparison. And so as an example of that, in the Tipton and Dothan series, which occur across the coastal plain of Georgia, and a little bit into South Carolina, they had many plots spread out across longleaf pine that you can see on the bottom and then converted pasture land. And we would take multiple samples across multiple scales of replication. So each plot had multiple pedons in it. There were multiple plots spread across the land use to give you a real robust statistical comparison. And then we can make graphs and plots, and we can run ANOVA or other tests to tell us if things are statistically different or not. Well, as we did this, we learned a couple of things, which is that often spatial variability trumped any differences that we could see between land use systems. And so it became really difficult to do these statistical comparisons. And even when we did find differences, we had a hard time incorporating that into soil survey products or even telling people about what we were going to find. We did not find good methods of getting our products out into the hands of either policymakers, land users, anyone. And so while this study that I showed a few highlights of might expand to this little piece of Georgia, in the context of the United States, it's really not that meaningful. It's really hard to extrapolate it to different systems. So in our current work, we've had this big soil health initiative. You guys might have heard about it. So NRCS created a new division, the Soil Health Division, and their focus is primarily on education and partnership building, but we've also been collaborating with them on some minimum data set discussions, including soil biology into our traditional soil survey products. And we're not going to get rid of this idea of DSPs and comparison studies, but we're going to try to incorporate it more into the landscapes, soil systems that we traditionally map as part of soil survey. And we want to try to make products that are useful for our land users. And so an example of this type of project, if you've seen block diagrams that are in old soil surveys, they can tell you a lot about how the soil system functions, right? Things are slightly different on the top than they are on the bottom, and maybe in the middle it's yet a third thing. So we designed some studies through Northeast Nebraska that pair these types of, they're not exactly topic sequences, but that's the idea, that we have groups of soils that will function similarly and then pair those with different kinds of management systems. And this time, we tried to focus on things that NRCS, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, were particularly interested in. And our focus is on agriculture and on management systems, and pretty much the big takeaway from this thus far is that that surface sample is extremely important. This one was 0 to 5 centimeters, and then we did other horizons as well, and you only see differences in the very surface. And the idea for this is, as we do soil health assessments, maybe a land manager farmer goes to the field, takes a surface sample, and then says, okay, I have 2% carbon. Is that good? Well, it depends on where you are in the world, depends on what kind of soil you're on. And in this system, we can say, well, no, that's not great. You could get a lot more soil carbon for this particular system. And so our current approach is try to provide that information. We were really expecting to see a little bit more difference with landscape position and different types of soils. It may be that this particular system, it's less derived. There's not a ton of texture differences. There may be not a ton of production differences. And so that may be why we're not seeing a ton of differences. So there's a couple of other tools that are coming out of that that we're just getting started with. I won't dwell on them too much. But one is the Soil Health Rapid Assessment Tool. And the idea for this tool is to interface with some things that have been developed, like this Cornell Soil Health Test that we heard about earlier, and SMAF, the Soil Management Assessment Framework, to use those to score what we know about a soil series, what we know is possible for a type of soil, versus what we might see when we go out and do an assessment. And this is under development. If anyone is interested, please talk to me. But we don't have really good examples of using this in the field yet, but it's an idea for actually getting our information into the hands of producers and policymakers, which is something we really did not do very well last time. Another group that we're interacting with is not focused on U.S. systems, but the Land PKS, or Land Potential Knowledge System, is a suite of apps meant to provide access for locally appropriate land potential information. So that if a smallhold farmer goes out and is at the bottom of the hill, they will know what their soil can produce there versus what it might in another part of the landscape. And so the types of things that we're doing might inform these uses as well. So in the future, there will be some kind of NRCS effort, which is not going to be named what is on this slide, but I don't know what it's going to be named. So with soil health, some kind of inventory and evaluation of land use management systems. And the idea of this is to have an integrated hierarchy of systems and assessments across the country. So if we can find certain kinds of climates, certain groups of soils that behave similarly, and then we can assess the soil health impacts of different management systems within those, eventually we could cover most of the country with what we expect to see with different kinds of systems. But I think the most important part of this effort is going to be all of the background information that goes into this. So I don't know if any of you work with soil databases at all, but getting management system information out of these databases is, sometimes it doesn't exist. Sometimes it's just really difficult to see what it is. There is not an agreed upon system. WOCAT has their own system. USDA has their own system. That's pretty charitable, actually. It's just a collection of terminology. So that when we say, this is the soil property you get when you apply no-till, what does that mean? And so the background, really not cool part of this, you know, not the flashy part that the public is going to see, but the background information, that's going to be the part that is really important and I think will really make a contribution. Another thing, which I don't have a slide on, I don't think, is the citizen science effort. So part of that Land PKS and part of the Soil Health RAT tool would be to incorporate citizen science in some data gathering efforts that, you know, schools or individual farmers or anyone who makes an assessment that would lead to our body of knowledge and what happens to a certain soil under a certain set of management conditions. And the truth is, we may not really be able to use that in our assessment. However, I think it's a really good tool for engagement, for the teaching and getting the public involved and thinking that it's important. And I love the idea of focusing on organic matter because you can see it and you can show someone that if you put this information in at the top of the hill and the side of the hill and the first talk of the day focused on the barn soil in North Dakota, and they have these eroded shoulders that show up from the road. I mean, you can drive past them and see where they are. And if you can incorporate that into some systematic knowledge that the public has about what's going on with their soils, I think it could be really powerful. So this was the part I really wanted to do for this talk and I didn't really get to. So in the future, we'd like to really capture the relationship between soil health and ecosystem services through some kind of energy balance equations. So is there a characteristic response curve for each soil or group of soils? Maybe that's ecological sites, and how they can respond or provide services for us. So if I input energy into a system, seeds, fertilizer, tillage, whatever it may be, then I'm going to extract some sort of service. Maybe that will be production of a crop. Maybe that will be filtering of nutrients before it comes out of a tile drain. And so we would expect these groups of soil to behave in a similar way. And maybe we, depending on whether it's a degraded or an enhanced healthy soil, maybe that would change the relationship between the two. And there's some literature that speaks to this, but not in quite the way we're thinking. So I made this graph look pretty shady intentionally. So it's very much ideas that we're throwing around. I would love to hear what anyone has to say about that. And with that, that's really all I have to say. I'd be really interested in any questions or discussion you guys might like to have.
Okay, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
Sure, Travis.
I'm pretty on the spot, guys. So for the future soil survey, soil health, soil quality, what is the anarchist direction of the soil division to try and evolve the soil survey into a more critical data set?
Okay, so to summarize, I think what you're asking me is, what is the future of soil survey in relation to soil health? Yeah, okay. Well, officially, I have no idea because I'm not in charge. I mean, that's the long and short of it. This is a political machinations that are over my head. But what I think is going to happen is that we're going to try to integrate the two somewhat so that when our, you know, NRCS has this big, extensive field office system, many counties in agriculture areas have a field office. When they go put things into their tools that tell them what's acceptable for production, what's acceptable, you know, for erosion rates and that kind of thing, right now they're using our very basic, you know, one property per soil dominant component system. And our expectation is that we could improve upon that so that you either get extra credit if you have a healthy soil, or you predict what the healthy soil system will be, or perhaps you target soils that we know are susceptible to degraded soil health. So I don't know exactly what that looks like right now, but that's the idea, that it would be an enhanced database system that could do these different soil health scenarios.
Did they also relate these soil health things to the ecosystem services they provide, like, for instance, carbon sequestration?
We have a fair amount of data, and yes, but once again, the variability really outstripped much of what we could say. The one thing we have found differences is in depth distributions of properties. And that sometimes translates to stock differences just because, and it all comes down to erosion again. That seems to be a theme of this conference. But, yeah, I mean, it really does. But if you lose the topsoil, you lose your carbon storage and everything else. So that's, we have shown those, but we've.
It's not something that gives incentives to the farmer to do something about it.
Ooh.
Or is it in your plan maybe to have some kind of policy to give it an incentive to the department to actually have a better carbon pool and import?
We as NRCS are not responsible for the policy stuff for Soul Survey. So I have to be really careful. But
then you just can tell it was some European woman.
Yeah, okay. Well, no, I mean, it's just the idea is that we support conservation programs, and a lot, there's a whole conservation effects assessment group that works on modeling primarily what the effects of those programs are. But because of the nature of our farm bill system and because of the vast variety of soils and production systems we have, they tend to be really general. They do not tend to be very specific.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.